it's Jordan Johnson, and you're listening to the Grove Podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, I just want to remind you of some exciting things coming up. First, this Friday, January 25th, is our annual Grove Swap. For those who haven't heard about it, this is our phenomenal clothing swap we host each year right here at Passion City Church for all the women of Atlanta. We take donated items, and I'm talking about the good stuff, the clothes and shoes and accessories that you may even still love and fit into, but could make someone else feel really beautiful and confident. And we turn our entire space into a beautiful boutique department store. Not only will you walk away with some pretty new pieces for your closet, you're guaranteed to have a blast. So if you're in the Atlanta area, grab your girls and make plans to join us on Friday. Check out thegroveswap.com for all the details. Next, we are so excited to get back into the swing of our monthly gatherings. We have all sorts of fun and surprises set for this spring, and you will not want to miss any of it. So check out passioncitychurch.com/thegrove for all the dates, and be sure to join us on February 11th for our spring kickoff. So we have some fun things coming, but today we have a really special episode for you. We had the honor of hearing from Jenny and Levi Lesko at our Christmas Grove gatherings, and while they were here, they sat down with Shelley and had a really candid and open and fun conversation that we're going to hear today. As you may know, Levi and Jenny are pastors of Fresh Life Church in Montana, where they serve with their kids. Levi is also an author and speaker, and they actually preached together at our Christmas Grove and gave a powerful talk that you can hear on episode 5 of our podcast. In today's conversation, they really cover quite a spectrum, including dating and boundaries and all kinds of relationships, as well as some deeper insight into their grieving process after losing their precious daughter, Lenya. We know you'll enjoy it, so here is Shelley Giglio with Jenny and Levi Lesko.
So welcome to the Grove Podcast. We have today some of our very favorite people on earth, Levi and Jenny Lesko, and they, I actually should say it, Jenny and Levi.
You really should.
Oh, because I feel like, honestly, if you're really honest, this is true of most guys who are married and probably some that aren't, but Levi has a lot of words. He has some great things to say.
Yes.
He spends his words well.
Yes.
Jenny has reserved some of hers, but boy, when she speaks, the power comes down.
Oh, you're so sweet.
You have such great things to say. And, I don't know. I just feel like with guys, sometimes they get a lot of credit for saying things, and we all know that it's teamwork. And
oh,
I love, love that you're here together.
Thank you.
I love that that you've been at the Grove with us together, which has been really special to have you guys, and just a brilliant moment for us to stand in the wake of what God's doing in your life, and to really be the recipients of the goodness that He's poured into you. And I know there are moments where that wasn't the easiest thing, but to now see it poured through you is one of the most powerful things that we could take in.
Wow.
So thank you for that.
Thank you, Shelley. Gosh, we feel honest. I mean, I'm speaking for myself, but
I guarantee Levi will speak for himself.
Yeah, leave me out of this. You just do your thing. And I'll,
but I feel so poured into by the goodness of God through you and Louie and in your whole team. And I've never experienced anything like what we experienced with the Christmas Grove. And so
it's special. It's
really
days
special
to get to, I think, be in those moments where Jesus arrived on earth. So our hearts are already so tenderized, you know, right, with Christmas stuff.
Yeah.
But then just to get to stand in the presence of God in that moment and to tell Him that He's so worthy of our worship, that He's so worthy of our attention when everything is pulling us away from that. Seems like Christmas season is the hardest time to actually pay attention to God.
Wow.
And it's interesting because it's actually the moment that we should be paying the most attention, it feels like.
Right.
So anyway, thanks for the investment. I think
Thank you.
Amazing to watch. I want to talk a little bit today just about life and ministry. I want to talk about your family. I want to talk about things that people will just love knowing about you guys. So I'm a question asker by nature, so I thought I'd start with a few of mine, but I want it to be more of a conversation. So if you feel like you want to bring up a subject that I haven't thought of, then please feel free to do that.
Okay.
But I would love to start by just letting you guys tell us a little bit about your family. Tell us about the history of your family and just sort of your kids. They're some of my most favorite people. And I think we always can often as adults think, well, when they grow up, they're going to be amazing. But I think your kids are already amazing. And I'd love for you just to talk out loud about that for a second.
Thank you. Well, it all started, at least for me and Levi, we met in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I was a missions internship at a church in Albuquerque. And I was born and raised in Monterey, California, but decided to move to New Mexico to be a part of this internship for a year. And my commitment was, I'm going to be a part of this for a year, and then I'm going to move back to California. I'm going to go to Biola. I'm going to be a dancer at Disneyland, maybe be a princess.
Yes, please be a princess. Oh my gosh, is it too late? Can we still do that?
I don't think so.
I think you could still be a princess.
Day's young.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm into this already.
So that was like my plan, but then moved to New Mexico. And I feel like at a young age, God gave me a heart for missions just to be able to travel and tell people about Jesus and serve. That's one of my most favorite things is to serve. And so I met Levi halfway through my internship year. And I made a commitment to not romantically date for that whole year. And I met Levi and
trouble.
He had made no such commitment.
Halfway through, met her, had made no such oath.
And you're like, what is the holdup? What are we doing?
Yeah, but it kind of turned out cool because even though it wasn't like easy to honor that and get her to the end of that without dating, so we just kind of really focused on our friendship. The other side of it was by the time we did start dating, we had a really good friendship.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And I think, you know, we never would have done it, but I wouldn't do it any other way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the thing about like physical intimacy, like kissing, even if it's not like actual sexual intimacy, is that it can become a substitute for actual meaningful vulnerability.
That's so true.
Where you're just like talking and, yeah, you know, you could just spend a whole evening, you know, just kind of holding hands, making out, whatever. And before you know it, you feel like you're so close to each other, but you're not.
Yeah.
And so we had that, we would hang out in groups a lot, but sometimes we would just be the two of us, but it wasn't like we were dating. It was more just like a friendship developing. And, I look back on that and I feel like that's the, honestly, some of the secret sauce for us is that before we were ever anything, there was a really good foundation of friendship.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, and I hear of couples who have known each other since they were like high school or junior high. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm always so jealous of that because I wish Levi and I have known each other for that long. But yeah, I am so thankful for that time period where we didn't get to know each other like we had known each other when we were in junior high. But
She wouldn't have liked me if I was a junior. We never
would
have made it.
I think, would we be friends
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, Louie.
You would have made fun of me.
Yeah. So now married, this April will be 15 years married.
Congratulations.
Thank you
so much.
That's
amazing.
Yeah.
So you have a few kids.
We got a gaggle of them. You want one?
You got a gaggle. Yeah. I like them all.
We got one that wants to live with you guys. But yeah, so five total, four girls, one boy. Lennox snuck past the goalie right there at the end. And
he's such a special child.
Goodness gracious. He calls her bomb now. He's saying, barely saying mom.
Well, it's funny because like he'll say papa. Like papa's his favorite. Dad.
He likes to say dad.
He is Levi's greatest
fan. Scientists have proven that dad's an easier word to say than mom.
I think it's where every kid starts, right?
Yeah. It's easier to say dada.
Yeah. But I think when they're whining and crying, it's easier to say mom. Because it's like,
or in your case, bomb.
Yeah. But yeah, Lennox is a special little guy.
It's actually so cute because like Lennox will pick up one of Levi's books and he automatically turns it to the back and starts smiling and saying, dad.
Oh, I love that.
And he freaks out and he's just like showing everyone, look at my dad. And I love it so much. I love it so much. But he says, papa, and fresh life. And
he howls like a wolf and he'll roar like a lion. Sometimes, most mornings he greets us. We walk into the crib and he'll go,
oh, I love
it. How he greets you in the morning. Start
the day. Welcome to the AM.
That's it.
Yes. That's so good.
It's so cute. But honestly, it's been such a special thing having a little boy. And we have four daughters and we honestly just thought we were going to be parents to daughters, and we loved it. We love our girls so much, and we were totally okay with having four daughters.
We never tried for a boy, and I always resented people saying, oh, you know, you must wish you had a boy, or, you know,
didn't get that boy.
And so I was like, hey, my girls are awesome. What are you talking about? I don't even want a boy. And it was just kind of like, we had an open hand with it. And obviously we weren't like opposed to the idea of a boy, but I really didn't ever want it to feel for our daughters to feel like they were our second option,
yeah,
you know?
Right. And that's so, a good word.
Yeah.
I think sometimes when you're the most grateful for what you have, God will gift you with something additional. Mm. And maybe though you didn't, you know, in your heart think, well, I just want a boy, which I appreciate about you guys. I think sometimes you get what you didn't ask for by just being grateful for what you have.
Yeah, honestly.
And that's powerful in people's lives to really be thankful. Yep. And to embrace that. You guys do a beautiful job of
that.
Thank
you.
Talk about really inviting those same kids into ministry with you, because it feels like, from my perspective, that I watch people do ministry a lot of different ways. And as a non-parent, it's always easier for me to notice people with kids and what they do and don't do, and even comment on it, not to out loud. Of course, I'm not stupid. I wouldn't do that. but even to myself thinking, that's interesting. That's a different path. But you guys modeled the idea that ministry is family inclusive. Mm. Talk about that for a second.
Well, first of all, let me just address something you just said, because you just said I know what you meant, of course, but you and Louie, I see God having given you guys more than hundreds of thousands of kids. Yeah, I mean, and what you guys have been able to birth with the Passion Movement.
Yeah.
I was thinking just the other day about how many kids are being raised in fatherless homes and how it's devastating. Specifically, college rates of young men getting into college, getting out of college, getting good jobs, taking more dangerous jobs like lumberjack, fishermen, jobs that are long haul truckers, jobs that will have a higher mortality rate, suicide rates, obesity rates. Young men are just being devastated in our day. And a lot of it has to do with the fatherless home. And
I was
just praising God, just thinking about the Passion Movement and what you guys have been able to be as symbolic parents to a generation that you've pointed to God's glory. And so I know that we are fruit to the what God has birthed through you guys. So there's a lot of different ways to be a mom and a dad. And you guys are, in that significant, special way, parents to so many who don't have that example. So I just had to address that.
Thank you for saying that.
And London's pretty good too.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
Best thing in our family, for
but
sure.
But we just haven't ever known in any other way, you know, than the kids are with us. I think someone told us, when you're married, you're in a boat on a river, and the boat's going down the river. And for our river, it's preaching ministry. For someone listening to this, it's, you know, you're a stockbroker, or you're, you know, you run a Lululemon store, or your startup company does graphic design, whatever. You're in a river, and you're occupying that space that Jesus wants you to occupy till he comes back. And that's the boat going down the river. And when there are children now in the boat, they are coming into this boat that's already in motion. Mm. And they're going to be in that boat for a season. But the children are meant to go. However long that takes, 18, 20, whatever. For us, we have, of course, a child that left after 5 years. But the plan is eventually the children are in their own zone, their own boat.
Right.
So to redirect the boat's goal around the kid that's now in it is to violate principles that cannot help but come back to haunt you. Hmm. Because once they inevitably do go, if you've stopped your boat ride for them, then what are you going to stay in their boat now?
Right.
You know, so we've just kind of had this philosophy of like, you're a welcome, honored guest in our boat ride, but this boat's in motion. And so we love to have you on it, but you're not the center of this thing.
That is so profound, I think, for parents to hear, because I feel like so many people who long for children long for a purpose. And they don't know that that's what they're looking for. But if they actually heard God say you have purpose before your kids arrive, that you are destined to something prior to having a family, then you can actually invite that child into that destiny. And that's a different invitation than asking and pressuring a child to become that destiny.
Gosh. Well, you're putting more on the kid than they can bear.
Exactly my point.
And I think it ends up, I don't know if you saw that short film that Pixar did on the front end of the new Incredibles. But basically, there was a mom who ends up eating her son because she wanted to keep him back. He was a dumpling. It was
I don't even know what you're talking about right now.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I'm very excited to hear, okay, but so I don't know about dumplings.
It's an Asian short film, and this little boy is represented by a dumpling. She made him, you know, enrolled him, and he's this happy little dumpling. Mm-hmm. He grows, but then eventually he gets a girlfriend, leaves in a car with rebels, a teenager with a top down, the convertible. And eventually he comes back with this girl who's going to marry. And this mom is so distraught over this child that is her life, wow, that she wants to keep him back. And so she gobbles him up.
Wow.
And it's this kind of like picture of you destroy the thing that you put too much on.
Right.
Yeah. And I think as kids, we're modeling all the time, right? And if we show kids that that's what life is, then they're certainly going to duplicate that when they have their own families.
Right.
But if we actually model for them what it's like to be on course with God and in motion with God, called by God, living for God, then they actually want to duplicate that model instead. And you guys, I mean, you're certainly not perfect parents. I don't know that I've ever met any, but you guys model, I think, for your kids what it looks like to live with destiny so well, so beautifully. And I just feel like, man, how blessed will we be when the next generation rises and does the same.
Thank you, Shelley. It's so kind.
Thank you.
These little things are huge too in that. Yeah. Like, I mean, I know there's a lot of parental thoughts and I don't want to step on landmines, but you know, the kids cry every time you go on date nights when they're young and you leave them with the babysitter, but you're teaching them.
It's hard to leave that. Like,
especially if you're bomb, like you are.
Well, they're crying and clinging to your pant, like, don't go. But if you're teaching them that one day they're going to have a husband who fights for them or a wife who fights for them, and you're actually, even though it's hard in the moment, that kid sleeping in between you and bed, you know, I know that's a sensitive subject, but let me tell you something. It's metaphorically and symbolically and actually in between you two.
Yes.
And then even just the practical stuff. It's like our kids come to us with nightmares too, but ushering them back to their bed.
Right.
And I think you just teach those things early on.
Yeah. And I think it's messy. Like, I don't know if I could say, this is how you do this and this is how you do this, because I mean, you're presented with, like, every day is totally different. Right. I mean,
and when child is different.
Exactly. Every child is different. Every season is different. When they're babies, there's just so much that is so different and unpredictable and messy that it's really hard to sometimes even like say, well, this is what I do. Because then the next day it's like, actually, we're changing it because
never mind on that last thing.
We write the plans in pencil.
I think that's good. Right. Erasers are needed.
But I think for me personally, it's been because I have an amazing mom, and I'm so thankful for her, and I love her so much. I think she modeled maybe what it looked like more to put the kids first before the marriage. My parents were married for 30 years before they got divorced, but I think I do have more of that tendency to put the kids first, and I think that in my life and in my mind, the constant reminder and fight to, okay, yeah, it's really hard to go on a date night tonight because I'm nursing or whatever, and this is a difficult season, but I can have a bottle and I can give it to the babysitter, and the kids are going to be fine. Yeah. And this is going to be so much, so good for our relationship.
And to be quite honest, you know, we did have the night that our daughter Linya passed away and went to heaven. It was on a date night, mm-hmm. you know? So the last couple hours of her life, we weren't with her because we were on a date, but I'll tell
you
this.
Do you feel like you have any PTSD from that? Almost like,
well, yeah, I'll say this. Yeah. We couldn't go on date nights after that happened for months. We did them in mornings. It was just too hard.
Like a year even.
We shifted all of our date nights to date mornings.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. And the first couple, hard.
Yeah.
Leaving the kids. Leaving Daisy. Yeah.
Clover was a very young baby.
We're crying. Yeah. And leaving them in the bed. But it was so important for us. And then we're 6 years on the other side of it now.
Yeah.
This month now, actually. Yeah. So we're really close to the 6 year mark. I hadn't really thought about that this month, since it's been December only a few days. Mm-hmm. That first date night, the first date morning, I remember sitting at Buffalo Cafe with you, and we're like, I had oatmeal and you had, you know, an omelet. And I remember we were both just weeping into our food. It was so hard.
Yeah.
But now, like week after week after week, and eventually, I don't remember when, we shifted into nights again.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it's still on the same day, yeah. Thursday. Yeah. And, but it's a source of power now for us because yeah. we haven't run from
so
it.
So did the discipline help you do that to reset what seemed, and obviously it was a tragedy. Like we all want to talk about that too, but also you fought through that tragedy to make it be a win for your life. And most people stop at the tragedy and nothing ever gets redeemed. Nothing ever gets reestablished and no hope ever comes from it. And I want you to talk about that because, you know, we might not have the death of a child in our story. Many of us will not ever relate to you in that way, but we'll have something where it feels like the whole world stops.
Right.
And everything is done. It's off track. It's not right. God has forsaken, or I feel like he's forsaken me. I must be off the map, must not be paying attention to my life, or he wouldn't allow this. What do we do then? And you guys just with a simple date night thing turned it into a discipline and a overcoming. So I want you to unpack that out of that little moment and tell us, what do? Where do you go?
Definitely, it's like you said, it's that discipline and it's that, it's taking something that's small, that seems small, but that seems also impossible at the same time and walking toward it and doing it. So something that that kind of became verbiage for us was running towards the roar, because the thing that is most difficult and most scary seems to be standing right in front of you, roaring at you, and your initial reaction is to run away, because you want to run away from what's scary and you don't want to walk towards something that looks like it's going to eat you alive. And so if you run away, I mean, in the analogy of lions, you're running into the enemy's lair because there are female lions ready to pounce on you and devour you. But if you can just walk towards the thing that's roaring, that one actually can't do as much damage, and you're actually continue, like you can walk and then get stronger and stronger. And so for us,
Jenny, that's profound.
Well, and your life becomes full. That's not true. It's us. Your life becomes full of booby traps and shrines otherwise. Mm-hmm. Booby traps and shrines. And you're never going to stop running.
Yeah.
So if we're going to run from Thursdays and we're going to run from date nights, okay, then we're going to run from all Linda's clothes.
Yes.
And then we're going to run from, you know, memories. And we never say the word. You know, there was a day when you would grieve for 2 weeks, wear black or a sash, and then you'd put it away and never speak of them again.
Right.
Teddy Roosevelt's mom and wife died on the same day in the same house. While his wife was giving birth, she dies. Then upstairs in the same room, his mom passes away.
Unbelievable.
He rushes onto a train to South Dakota and buries himself in the work of cattle roping and cattle punching and being a cowboy, and never speaks their names again. And wouldn't have anything to do with that little girl that was born for a long time. Wow. He shoved it away, shoved it down. And I think that was how we grieved for a while.
Yeah.
But then the problem is you're just waiting eventually for a landmine of grief to explode into alcoholism or abuse, or the marriage disintegrates or whatever. And you can so build your life full of things you're scared of that you're constantly being chased. Right. Or you can choose to do what Jenny said and run towards what scares you. What we said was, look, we're going to let this grief sink its fangs into our breast. And if it kills us, then we'll die. But at least we won't have to live a life of fear.
Right. Well, the redemption process in watching you do it that way, in taking on the hard things and actually moving your life toward them and not away from them, is what has affected all of us so deeply. And it speaks to a greater God than what some of us know.
Mm.
When we watch you say, I hear the roar, and my instinct, because we're all survivors, is to hide from the roar.
Right.
But the best thing for my life is to walk toward it.
Right.
And I think it's even interesting and funny that, you know, Lennox is roaring when you pick him up in the morning. Right. I just think of the things that he could do.
Totally.
The one thing that you hear morning after morning after morning is a lion roar from a precious child who honestly is a gift back in some ways.
And he would never have been born if Linya wouldn't have gone to heaven. That's a fact. Because, you know, we were at, and I know there's a lot of thoughts on child planning, but we were about to make a decision right after Linya. The date was set to end our family growth
right
after what what would have been our Christmas vacation, then it was going to be over. Mm-hmm. And when she went to heaven, we obviously didn't do anything like that for a while. And then eventually Lennox comes around. So it's an honest, her hand is on that, you know, mm-hmm. her going to heaven and just God moving through that unforeseen situation to bring about
and
little
just
boy.
Just knowing
into
our that
home.
His life is such a reflection of God's smile yes. for you guys. And, yes. and even the joy that's in his face. Every time I look at him, he radiates that joy that I think just, It brings back so much of maybe what was lost in that season mm. of your life.
And his initials, LAL, they honor her, yeah. Linnea Avery Lesko.
He even looks like her a lot.
He does.
It. It's precious yeah. to see. All right, I want to turn just a little bit and talk about ministry for a second. And we could talk for days. Honestly, we could do this for hours. Mm-hmm. But
and,
I think
and we have.
And we have. And we will. And tonight, let's do dinner. Okay.
Come on,
okay,
let's go. Great.
But just talking for a second about trusted people in the midst of ministry. Can we talk about how you've created a concentric circle of people around your life?
Mm. Layers, I think, would be the word that comes to my mind, right? Layers. I yeah. mean, outside, inside. You know, voices of people who are doing the same thing you're doing, people who don't want anything from you, need anything from you, so therefore are safe to speak in a very unfiltered way to you.
Yeah.
I think if only the only people who can speak into your life are in some way either authority or paycheck, you know, benefiting from life with you, you'll never really hear what you need to hear.
Well, that's profound, right?
You have to have people around you who will tell you, hey, you're being dumb.
Yeah.
You know, some of my favorite moments, you know, your husband, he'll pour the tough medicine down my mouth.
Yeah.
You know, did it today at lunch. Hey, you probably didn't think about it, but this comes across this way. And some of my most helpful moments have been from people who aren't impressed by me. I mean, they're in my corner. They're yes, not just out to 100%. Spite you.
Yes.
You know? I'll put you in your place.
I'm going to show you. Yeah,
that's not helpful. No,
those but, people would not be in the concentric circle.
No, yeah, so. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And I think, you know, they say you are the average of your five closest friends.
Yeah.
So take your five most trusted people. And that's true. They say financially and spiritually, but when it comes to values and all that. So I think you pick people, you do choose your friends. Mm-hmm. You say, I remember you and Louis said to us, we're going to be your friends. You don't even have a choice about it.
And we're like, no well, option here. I'm
it's a good
sorry.
Thing because we've prayed for that for like 20 years. But we want to be like you and so to listen yeah. to you, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think it's just smart to put people around your life who are wise people. And I know for me, sometimes that selection process is difficult to actually see through, you know, motives and like you said, proximity. Sometimes people just want to be close because there's activity and movement in your life. And maybe if they position themselves there, then they can get the benefit of that as well. And you have to be a wise, discerning person to understand what's best for your life. And then you have to be a very courageous person to make those steps. And right. I feel like for me, sometimes I can discern it, but then I can't be courageous enough to say, I'm going to need to move you to the next circle out.
Mm.
Or I can be courageous, like I'm going to do whatever it takes, but then I'm not as discerning as I need to be to understand, oh, you're not the right person to be standing here. Mm. So
and we've learned a lot too about seasons and yeah. friendship seasons. I mean,
I will first of all say that we feel so spoiled with the friendships that we do have. Honestly, I feel like, I don't know if I've picked them as much as God's just like placed them into our lives
awesome.
And really blessed us with beautiful friendships. But it's true. Like Levi said, I feel like God's really opened our eyes to see the seasons of friendships. Because I think for me growing up, I thought, oh, if a friend's a friend forever, you know?
The Lord's loaded down.
Yes. I think we have a song about that, right?
We've no. been,
yes. Okay.
But like, I guess in my mind, I just thought, oh, if someone's your friend, then they're always going to be your friend
right.
and they'll always be there for you. And, but as we've grown together in ministry, we've just found that that's not true. And the people who say we're with you, we're going
to
die serving with you.
Yeah.
Those are actually the ones that
they're usually out the fast.
That are
usually
gone.
Playing.
Yeah.
It's that thou protestest too much.
Yeah. Or it's just like, why don't you just hang on to the words if you feel that
yeah,
and let that settle in you instead of speaking them and pronouncing
totally,
them over it all.
Totally. Yeah. And so we've just found, even just situations that come up where our friends are gone now, but it's like, but I thought we were going to be friends like for the rest of our lives. And I think for me, I've learned that it's so important to hold friendships with open hands and receiving the people that come in that God brings in your life, but also letting go and not holding tightly to those people, thinking that, well, you said you were my best friend, but where are you now? I think it's knowing that people who come in your life, hopefully you're the kind of friend that is going to make their lives better. And hopefully they're the kind of friend that leaves a mark on you. But just knowing that friends are going to come and go and seasons are going to come and go, and that's okay. And I think that has been something that I've been learning to hold those friendships lightly.
Yeah, and some of them were scaffolding. You know, maybe God brought us into someone's world and it served a purpose. And we were hopefully scaffolding to support them for the time that it was needed. Yeah. And if God sees fit to allow that scaffolding to come down, I think you have to have a mentality that says, you know, then we bless you. And as you go, we bless you as you come. And that obviously that's not fun and that's easier said than done. But when it happens, I think you just have to have the perspective that says, hopefully your world's better and bigger because of it. And should our roads cross again, then great, but we're okay with that.
Yeah. There's a couple of things we talk about. Oh, no, go ahead.
Sorry.
Jenny. No, you go.
But I will say, in this day and age with Instagram and Facebook and that digital connection, I feel like it's been a weird prolonging of a friendship that maybe is meant, because I feel like in the olden days, like you'd have people come in your life.
Right.
And then they'd be there. But then if they moved away, they would just be gone and you wouldn't really even ever know what was going on in their life. But now it's like you have friends, you follow them on Instagram, you know exactly what they're doing. And then they leave your life for whatever reason. But then you still know exactly what's going on in their life.
They had for lunch.
It's kind of confusing. Yeah.
But you feel like it's some sort of betrayal to unfollow them, but maybe that's the most healthy thing in some situations.
Right.
I remember a friend recently saying that she went and unfollowed most of the people she followed. And a lot of it was just for her own heart's sake that she figured out that she was spending so much energy worried about what everybody else was doing and that she needed to be focused on what God was speaking over her and telling her to do. She needed to be obedient. So she just unfollowed a bunch of people. And I think in today's world, that seems like,
how could you?
That's almost scandal, right? Yeah. Scandal. Right.
Totally.
But in truth, it's protection.
Yeah.
And sometimes our lives need nothing more than to have something removed a little bit from us. And we talk a lot around here about open hands. I mean, I think probably on everything I have ever done or said, I've used some explanation of open hands because I just feel like God is going to give and take away. The scripture says he gives and takes away.
Mm.
Blessed be his name.
Amen.
And the problem with us is that if we're gripped so firmly to something, he literally has to pry it from us. But he's not going to change whether he takes it or not. Just because he walks up to us and sees our hands closed and gripping something with all of our might doesn't mean that it's going to change whether he needs to take it from us.
Yeah.
He is sovereign God. He knows whether we need to hold it or not hold it, right? So we can all say collectively, okay, God, I trust that you know more than me. And yet we grip things as though it's in our control.
So true.
And he's like, I'm going to need you to open that hand because it's either going to hurt you for me to take it from you, or you're going to let me take it the way I'm supposed to.
Wow.
So good.
And That's beautiful. When you can start visualizing your life in that term, when I can say to God, hey, you put the stuff in my hand to start with. Mm. It's not of my doing.
Right.
So you're the one who gave it to me. And if you feel like it's needed to be taken, then man, would you please have the freedom from my life to not feel like you have to rip it out.
I think it's really important just to have a peace in your heart about what you're prepared to allow friendships to mean from you.
Hmm.
Sometimes you're in a friendship that's a bit of a one-sided.
Yeah, of course.
You know, a little one way and a little bit of a valve like that. And I think sometimes you can, you know, my personality type, I can lose sleep over that, feeling like, man, my texts don't go answered, you know, but
what did I do wrong?
But I never miss the chance to serve you, to help you.
Yes.
And I think you just have to come to a place where you're like, hey, if that's what this relationship is, then I'll be a blessing to you as much as I can, but I'm not going to need anything from you to validate me or to give me something.
Yeah.
And I think there's a peace that settles in when you can just say, I'll be a servant in this, but I'm not going to allow you to have a place of idolatry in my heart.
That's a great word.
That's good.
And I feel like God can have the freedom then to give to us in beautiful ways and in beautiful seasons, like you talked about, Jenny. but not have it be a traumatic thing if it is taken from us. So yeah. That's
and
good.
In those moments when we feel that, because I think we all, you know, who among us doesn't have a little bit of that FOMO right. or why didn't I get invited or whatever right. it is. So I think, you know, it's like anytime you're feeling those things, that's always going to take you to a miserable place. So instead, like who in your life can you reach out to that you could bless that might be blessed by you thinking of them?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So it's like, okay, I wish they'd thought, well, who can I be not that way to? And that's I think you just pass it forward, right?
Yeah, that's really good. I think I have a hard time with what we were talking about earlier about the wise friends in our lives. I feel like I have to fight to ask for help, or I have to fight to ask for that advice and wisdom in my life, because I think for some reason, it's probably a pride thing. I think, well, I can handle this, or like, okay, I'm struggling with this, but I'll just push through. I feel like I'm a push through kind of person where I try to like muscle through it. Even like with headaches and stuff, I'm like, I'll be fine. And then all of a sudden I have a migraine and I'm like passed out on the floor. But I think, that's something that I've had to grow in, as far as, oh my gosh, I probably have 20 amazing, beautiful, godly women in my life who are older and more seasoned. And why on earth do I try to muscle through when I could easily just say, hey, this has been a struggle for me.
Right.
Hey, I know you have a really busy schedule. And I think that might be something too, where I feel like I'm imposing. But I think if we have those people who we've allowed in our life, why not ask for help, and why not ask for prayer, and why not ask for advice? And so I think that's something that I'm even now just growing in and really wanting to be better at. But,
and I think even in just thinking about the other person, because we are other people oriented type people, which I love, but you're kind of stealing the blessing of the person who can give to you.
True.
By saying I'm fine and I'll do it all by myself.
Yeah.
And by God, I'll just wake up tomorrow and gut it out.
Right.
It steals the opportunity for somebody to bless you with what God's given them.
So true.
And it takes from them what they really want to offer.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, even if I'm others oriented and want it to not be about me, the greatest thing I can have in doing that is to let them bless
right.
me.
Yeah.
And boy, so when good. You let go of control of that, then you let God move the kingdom around like he sees fit.
Mm.
I'm going to gift this person and call them to your life, and then I'm going to let them exercise those gifts in these moments. And we can put up the big no to that. Like, nope, I'm good. And I think that can stop God's kingdom movement. And when we look at it that way, it's like, well, I don't want to be that person.
Right.
I don't want to shut down what God has in his heart. So I want to open my hands and just say, here I am, I'm available.
Totally.
And I can give, but I can also receive.
I love that.
So
not being a stumbling block. I was just reading about that in Matthew, and when Jesus was telling his disciples, hey, just so you know, I'm going to go and die on the cross and all this. And when Peter was like, oh, that'll never happen to you. And then Jesus said, get behind me, Satan.
Exactly.
You are a stumbling block to me, and you are not thinking about God, what things of God. You are thinking about only human things. Yes. And that just stopped me in my tracks, because I don't want to be that stumbling block to God.
He unfollowed him on Instagram.
Yeah, God is like, I'm going to need to unfollow you.
Sorry, Peter. For next week, you're blocked.
You are totally blocked. Oh man, y'all are the best.
Hey, thank you for just time and energy today. Thank you for investing in us and in our house. And thank you for being beautiful friends to us. We're so, so grateful.
Thanks for having us on. We love you.
Love every minute.
Love the Grove. Love the Grove podcast.
Yes, thank you.
Amazing.
We are so grateful for our time with Levi and Jenny. And we want to say thank you so much to Shelley and to the Luscos for all of that incredible insight and encouragement today. If you'd like to hear more from Jenny and Levi, check out freshlife.church or levilesko.com. And be sure to go back to episode 5 of this podcast, if you haven't already, to hear their incredible message from our Christmas Grove. Today's episode was produced by myself, with executive direction from Shelley Giglio. As always, we hope you're loving the Grove podcast, and we would love to hear from you in a kind review from wherever you happen to be streaming or downloading. You can track along with us at The Grove on Instagram at @PCC_TheGrove or at PassionCityChurch.com/TheGrove. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Grove Podcast.